You are Locked On Syracuse, your daily podcast on the Syracuse Orange, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Welcome in to another week of the Locked On Syracuse podcast. Today's episode is brought to you by Built Bar. Go to builtbar.com and use our new promo code, LOCKEDON20, the number 20 at the end. So LOCKEDON20, and you will get 20% off your next order. Tim Leonard and Tyler Rocky.
Oh, Tim, remember the days of 20 wins? Those days?
Hey, at least the winning season streak is going to stay alive, right?
I get that it's a shortened season, but you know what's on, though, Tim? It's officially on now. Our charred orange and brown sugar bet is officially on. So we have that to look forward to, I guess. Or not look forward to.
I'll happily eat that orange if it comes to
it. For those who don't know what this is a kind of an internet trend that was going around, but basically there were people out there who would get COVID-19 and they would lose their taste and smell. And what they would do to get the taste and smell back was, and this is for people who had the symptoms for a very long time, like upwards of 3-4 weeks, but they would burn an orange and then mix it up with like brown sugar and stuff like that and just eat it. And magically their taste and smell would come back. And we have decided that if Syracuse had lost that Georgia Tech game, Tim and I were going to eat one of those charred oranges with the brown sugar if Syracuse now makes the tournament. And we're not saying they back their way in through the extra team on standby. No, we have to hear Greg Gumbel say the Syracuse orange on Selection Sunday, and then we will eat it on film for all of you, and it'll be on our Twitter account at @LO_Syracuse.
So I'm all for this bet, and I'll happily eat that orange. And you're right. I also think the team that's going to back their way in is definitely Duke. If it comes down to it, that is how this ends.
And listen, there's four teams that could back their way in. Although, I will say this. According to Josh Pastner, we will be eating those oranges because he's calling Syracuse a tournament team. It's like, Josh, now Pastner's been saying this for a little bit now.
Right.
This isn't some sort of new act with him. He's been saying that the ACC deserves 11 teams this year. And it's like, Josh, go look at the standings real quick and tell me how many teams you see above 500. Because there's only 10 of them, I think. Maybe it's down to 9 now. But anyway, that's him just kind of pumping up his wins, I think. He's trying to get the committee to view the ACC. And listen, it's kind of the same thing that we said that Boeheim was doing to a degree.
Every
with
coach
Johnson.
Does this. Yeah, right. Yeah.
Every coach is going to go out and pump up their wins, pump up the program. It's their job. It's part of their job. But it's pretty laughable that this is the take that Josh Pastner isn't just taking, but doubling, tripling, and quadrupling down on.
So just real quick, this is kind of our agenda here. And for those that are maybe catching this on Monday morning, this is our recap podcast. We would have liked
in case you haven't heard, Syracuse lost over the weekend.
Yeah,
pretty good there. That was the epitome of tell me Syracuse lost without telling me Syracuse lost over the weekend.
Yeah. Hey, at least the lacrosse teams are doing well.
Two top 10 wins over the weekend? Was it top 10 or top 5?
Top 5, I think. I know for sure Virginia was top 5 on the men's side, but the Cuse women's team, I think they've had 2 top 5 wins in dominating fashion to start the year. And then the men's lacrosse team, bad loss to Army week 1, but Tucker Dordovic in the midfield. I watched a good chunk of that game. I love watching our lacrosse team right now. That's our saving grace in the athletics program.
Lacrosse and they school. Just that's crushed. That's what we are. Yeah.
Yeah, they crushed Virginia 20-10. They crushed him, as Boeheim says in his famous press conference when he's standing up for the Final Four run. But anyway, okay, so this is going to be a Georgia Tech recap. The episode that you might already have in your podcast feed already, unless you're listening Sunday night, will be the UNC preview. That game's obviously coming big Monday. We'll get you all caught up on everything you need to know about that. So for our loyal listeners, you can get our recap
thoughts. You get a twofer today.
I know. We're doing it for you guys, and I wish we could have gotten it out a little bit earlier, but it's been kind of a hectic weekend. So anyway, let's dive in to this Georgia Tech game, which was a topsy-turvy one, to say the least.
Oh, man. This was an experience here.
It kind of turned into a Georgia Tech dunk contest in the second half. Shout out to our pal Anthony DeBundo. I think he was the first one who said that. And man, it's Moses Wright turning into Moses Malone, as you called on the preview podcast. Mm-hmm. And Look, at this point, if there's a competent big on the other side, they turn into Shaq, and this team gets exposed. And the high-to-low pass was just there for the taking all game long. And it was really tough to watch yet again because they had no answers. Even though Jesse Edwards did play some, which I thought was a positive from this game. And I thought he looked...
23 minutes.
Yeah,
he looked
pretty
all
good.
Right out there. Let's put it this way, all right? Let's not over-glorify what Jesse did out there. He played the minutes that he had to play because Marek picked up the three very early fouls. And some of them not the smartest of fouls and definitely not the fouls that you'd expect out of one of your smarter basketball IQ players like Marek is. But Jesse went out there and he did the simple things right. Now, also worth noting, that's the guy who Moses Wright bullied. That's the guy who took advantage of his matchup. So I think that, listen, I want to pump the brakes on Jesse a little bit.
Okay, let's get into this because I actually thought he was pretty good from watching back the game and stuff. All right, quick break to tell you guys about betonline.ag, the fastest and easiest way to bet on all your sports action right now. Football might be over, but plenty to bet on out there. You got NBA, college basketball. I know March Madness right around the corner. Today is March 1st as of me recording this, so very excited to be able to bet on some of those college basketball games coming up. Also, NHL in full swing. You get real-time updated odds and props on almost anything you can imagine at betonline.ag. Head to their website on your mobile device or just online. Sign up today for a free account and receive a 50% welcome bonus on your first deposit when you use our promo code LOCKEDON. Again, that promo code is LOCKEDON, all one word, LOCKEDON, for a 50% welcome bonus on your first deposit. The reason why I'll say that, Jesse wasn't great. Like, I'm not saying start the guy.
And listen, I'm not saying that he was expected to go out there and be, like, Tim Duncan, okay?
Sure.
Like, at the end of the day, he's a backup center, really a third-string center, who Boeheim did not think was ready to play. And he threw him out there for 23 minutes out of necessity.
So put it this way. For all the talk from Boeheim all year long about he's not ready, the centers aren't ready, I mean, how many times has he said the words not ready in relation to these young centers, right? We watch them in practice. Right. They're not
Drink
giving us
every
enough.
Time. Yeah.
For all that talk, he exceeded my expectations because
he comes in
and I was worried when he came in because Cuse is already down, but they go on this big comeback and they take a lead into the locker rooms and that whole entire comeback.
Yeah, shout out to Alan Griffin.
Yeah, I mean, it was a large part because of Alan Griffin, sure, but I think also, like, Jesse held his own down there. He finishes the game with 8 rebounds. I didn't think he came in and looked like a complete non-factor out there. And I do think a lot of the struggles in the zone right now are forward-dependent. And we can get into that a little bit. But when you talk about Moses Wright was so good, so much of it is the forwards aren't getting to their spot when the pass goes to the mid-post, in my opinion. I think Jim has said that a little bit, too.
Right, exactly. He has mentioned that plenty of times. But with Jesse, I feel like he made the easy plays. Like, sure, he got 8 rebounds. But if you go back and watch those 8 rebounds, nearly every single one, if he isn't getting that rebound, it's a problem. And there were some. He probably should have had a couple more and then ends up getting bullied by Moses Wright a couple times to get those rebounds. I also think he got away with a couple of uncalled fouls, too. I mean, he only ends up with 2 fouls in this game. I think he really had like 4 or 5 in the game. So
his points were misleading, too, because every single one of his buckets was all because Kadari got in the lane or someone else gave it right
to him. Or even
Joe.
Joe got in the lane a couple times and set him up for that one trip to the free throw line, too. So, no, I think his stat line is a little misleading, like 7 and 8. And I feel like we're doing the whole Dino Babers, or at least I'm doing the whole Dino Babers, Jacobian Morgan deal right now, where kid goes out, probably not ready, and puts together a serviceable game, at least in terms of the numbers. But no, I think he did the little things that he was asked to do right. It's just at this point in the season, and you would have expected for a guy like Jesse who played last year and now is in year number 2, he would have been a little bit further along. I know he's a project, but I still would have, and again, this isn't necessarily his fault. This is the indictment of Syracuse has not been able to develop a big man over the last X number of years. So that's the thing that's troublesome, is that we saw 3 different centers come into this game, if you include Marek, and really none of them could make any sort of major impact on the game. Listen, I thought Jesse went out there and played hard, but he's clearly not big enough in terms of weight-wise and strength-wise to handle some of these bigs. And, like, listen, it's not like Moses Wright is some sort of Adonis out there, okay? He's really just your kind of run-of-the-mill big man in the ACC, and you can say, oh, well, Power 5, it's the ACC, it's the...
He's a little better than that, but yeah, I get what you're saying.
Yeah, so, like, he's not a guy who should be going out there and getting 31-16 on you. That's the bottom line. It doesn't matter where you are in the depth chart in terms of centers. The guy should not be going out there and getting 31-16. And that's where my frustrations lie.
Yeah, and the points in the paint, I think, was 55-25 in the end or something. Yes. It was laughable how much they just... And they really just didn't shoot any threes. And I was worried about that, given that Georgia Tech was shooting the ball coming in.
That's the thing that I think was interesting, too, is... I don't want to say Syracuse found a new way to lose, because we've seen them obviously lose in the past because of the whole big man thing. But it feels like the late trend has been the opponent shoots the lights out from three, especially in the first half. And Georgia Tech shoots the ball at a 26% clip from three in this game. They did not hurt the Orange with the three ball whatsoever. In fact, I would argue they hurt themselves more with the three ball than they did help themselves with the three ball in this game. So... If I was Josh Pastner, I would tell my guards, hey, get it to Moses every single time. We're going to throw it around, get a touch inside, and let him go to work. And, I mean, they almost worked their way out of this game because they kind of abandoned that for a little bit.
And the counter I would say to Jesse, and just another point to bring up there, you talk about how he's not developed, he's not far enough along for where he needs to be at this stage. I would agree. Also, you have to wonder... if the guy played in games more, would that help his development?
That's true.
And I think I saw enough from him in that game to say he has deserved more minutes this season. I'm not saying he should start. I'm not saying it was revolutionary what he did out there.
You're not even saying he necessarily deserves more than 10, but if you can get him 5-7 timely minutes, I'm not opposed to that whatsoever. I mean, Syracuse kind of played their best ball when they were going deep. In this, I mean, 9 guys, I believe, played in the first half. So that's one of the things where, okay, maybe if you get these guys a little more run, they will be in a better position to maybe help your team when Marek gets in foul trouble or, God forbid, there's another injury on this team moving forward.
And the other thing that Boeheim brings up, I think it was actually our guy Anthony DeBundo who asked him this question at the very end of his press conference, and he goes on for a long time about the center position and has it been recruiting, has it been development, what is it? And he said, we had a center, but he got hurt, Barama. And the other guys, we weren't expecting to play him this year. They aren't ready. Well, the thing about that that's really concerning is the fact that you only have one center going into this year who was very injury prone going into this year already.
Right.
And yes, did end the year last year on a very good stretch to end his junior year, Barama. But still, he hasn't been revolutionary. He hasn't been great since he's been with Syracuse. If you only have one center... then you're going to struggle in the ACC. And I think Jim knows that, but it's also just like, I don't think that's a valid excuse to say Barama got hurt, and that's why we're not even on the bubble right now. I know what he's saying. It's definitely a factor. I would have loved to have had Barama this year, but you got to have Jesse, and I don't think John Bull is ever really going to get there. He honestly looked pretty bad.
I will say this, though. I hope John Bull never transfers. If there's one guy on the roster, I never want... The kid's hilarious. I mean, they had him mic'd up before the Duke game. He was awesome. He's got nicknames for everyone on the team, all the coaching staff, too. I want to know what his nickname for Boeheim is. I'm sure he's got one. But, no, I never want to see that kid transfer. Although, I will say this about John Bull. In terms of when I see these players out there on the floor, just from watching him play, there's something in there, I think. And it just needs to be unlocked. And that's probably a coaching thing. But I think in terms of the physical gifts, I think he's a pretty coordinated guy as well. I think there's something in there with John Bull.
He's just so skinny.
Yeah, if he gets in the weight room and if he puts together a summer, I think there might be something in there.
Yeah, I was surprised to hear Boeheim said they've tried him at forward some, because I was going to bring that up. Like, why haven't they just thrown him out there at forward? And we got to see Marek finally at forward in this game for a little bit of stretch in the second half. I know he only played 10 minutes, so... Marek just had an off game, and if there was one guy that could afford an off game, I know it's terrible timing, but you can't really knock Marek for any of this season, and Jim said that in the press conference.
Hey, quick break to tell you about the best tasting protein bar on the market. It, of course, is Built Bar, and they keep rolling out new flavors into this lineup. They've got 6 new amazing flavors, including caramel brownie, cookies and cream, cherry barcia, lemon almond cheesecake, carrot cake, and apple almond crisp. You know, I'm not someone who likes to mix fruit with chocolate, but after trying these new Built Bars, my mind has been changed because they are amazing. The best part is they're healthy for you as well, but they are also an amazing treat. All the bars are low calorie, low sugar, high in protein, high in fiber, and great if you are on a keto diet as well. And right now, we've got a new promo code for you on the Locked On Podcast Network. That's right. Use the promo code LOCKEDON20 when you go to BuiltBar.com. Again, LOCKEDON20. That's the number 20, and you'll get 20% off your next order. Use the promo code LOCKEDON20 at checkout at BuiltBar.com.
Final thing I want to hit on here before we wrap it up. Alan Griffin, he has this tremendous first half. And I know his defense is bad, but I would have liked to have seen him more in the second half. We'll give a lot of credit to Jose Alvarado of Georgia Tech because they switched and put Alvarado on him. And you talked about this in the preview podcast. Alvarado is a small guy, but he's feisty and he can go up against bigger guards. And honestly, I was impressed at how much he shut down Griffin, but also there were stretches in that game where it got out of hand, and we could have used Alan Griffin's shot making on offense to maybe settle it. He was the hottest guy in the first half. He kept us in the game in the first half, and Jim kind of went away from him in the second half.
And the thing that's concerning to me is what I get, okay, Alan Griffin has his problems defensively. No doubt about it. You can just watch the game, you'll see a couple mistakes. I mean, I always flash back to one of the first couple games of the season, and I see him go back on defense, and he's trying to pick up a man, thinking he's in man-to-man defense. That's one of my favorite Alan Griffin moments of the season. Anyway, I digress. But if you're going to say that rebounding, or rather I should say the lack of rebounding, hurts this team more than the lack of defense hurts this team, why isn't Alan Griffin on the floor? Why is he not playing 40 minutes a night? Because he is probably, in terms of talent, like we used to say last year, that even though Elijah Hughes wasn't the biggest guy on the team, he was the most talented rebounder on the team. I would argue that Alan Griffin, Quincy probably has him edged out just by a hair in terms of rebounding talent, but Alan Griffin is second. Maybe first. You could even make that argument, I think, potentially.
Yeah. But
if you're going to say that rebounding is the biggest hole on your team, that guy needs to be playing 40 minutes. If he's out, not in foul trouble, and I know he had 3 in this game, but if he's not in foul trouble, he needs to be playing 40 minutes. I don't care what's happening defensively with him, because guess what? You could point at 4 different guys that are making defensive errors on this team. So that's my biggest gripe, is you can't go out and you can't have it both ways here. You can't get nitpicky with the rebounding and not play him. It just doesn't work.
Exactly. I just don't understand, why are the forwards so high up in the zone? And I don't know the zone as well as Jim Boeheim, but I'd love for someone to ask Jim Boeheim, okay, Jim, it seems like to us, the untrained eye, maybe, because obviously he's just going to, if you ask him a question about the zone, he'll be like, ah, you don't know. And yeah, well, I get that.
That's part of the reason why you ask questions, too. That's part of why people ask these questions about the zone, is because they don't know. They are trying to learn. That's part of it.
Exactly.
So don't get mad when people question the zone if you're not willing to explain. And I get, you don't want to give away the tactical advantage that you think you have, but then don't get mad when people ask questions about it.
What I've seen this year, and this is just me, the high-low pass is there for the taking. We've had no adjustments to it. Mm-hmm. It has been probably the single most vulnerable thing in the zone throughout the entire year. And the three-point defense has been bad at times, but it's also been pretty good at times. So that's why I'd say the high-low pass is the worst part. And it does feel like, and I think Jim has even said this, maybe he hasn't directly, but I think everyone listening to this podcast could acknowledge that it does feel like the forwards are playing a little higher up than normal. Sometimes it even looks like a 4-1 zone at times. And I watched a couple plays back when I watched back the game where Quincy is up at like 2 feet in front of the 3-point line guarding the wing. And then when the ball gets to the mid post, it's obviously Quincy's job to dart down and cover that baseline cutter guy who was Moses Wright in a lot of these cases. So when Jordan Usher got the ball, Quincy just had too much ground to cover from in front of the 3-point line or behind it, if you want to look at it that way. to about maybe 15, 16 feet to the baseline. And that pass is there for the taking. And Georgia Tech, credit them. They didn't settle for threes. They understood that. And they did a great job of getting it to Usher, who did a quick pass to Moses Wright. And it became a dunk contest. And I just love
every time.
Yeah, I'd love for someone to ask Jim, okay, are the forwards playing higher up? And maybe he'd deny it, but it looks like it to us. And what are you guys trying to do to stop the high to low pass? Because that, to me, when we talk about his coaching adjustments this year, they've had no answers for that, and I'm so sick of watching it.
Right. No, it's frustrating. And last thing I do want to hit on before we get out of here, but everyone was bashing Joe Girard out of the gate, because everyone likes to assume, oh, Syracuse is starting slow, and then they like to point the finger at Girard right away. Girard was the least of the problems in the start here, okay? So Syracuse goes down 8-0 to begin this game, right? And everyone is finger-pointing at Joe Girard on Twitter. Girard didn't allow a single one of those first four baskets, okay? You had Moses Wright bullying Dolezal 2 times. You had Boeheim picking up the technical foul because of the... First of all, that was a textbook block, all right? That, like, the call was right on the floor. Moses Wright, I mean, that's the product of Marek is too skinny, all right?
It was 50-50 to me, but it didn't warrant, like, let's freak out and get an early tech.
It's not worth getting the early tech there, definitely, all right? So, and then after that, Buddy Boeheim, or rather, no, Quincy had the turnover that led to the fast break, and just before your eyes, it's 8-0. I mean, Jim Boeheim technically allowed more points in the early going than Joe Girard did, so... I get everyone wants to point at Girard as the reason why Syracuse gets off to these slow starts. But and while I largely agree, most of the time it is Girard's fault. But this is not one of those times. This is not one of those times to be nitpicking at Girard, because it really, I thought Girard actually played all right in this game. So
yeah, first half he was good. He had some bad turnovers.
He didn't shoot the ball well, but yeah.
Yeah. No, I think he wasn't the problem. And Kadari, by the way, didn't really finish great in this game. He did get in the lane and make some nice plays, and he did some Kadari things that you usually can count on, but if he had finished a couple more, that could have been more helpful. And it was just odd to see him, because he's been great at finishing at the rim, so he had an off game finishing-wise. But, all right, that's going to wrap it for our Georgia Tech recap. If you want to keep listening to our thoughts on Syracuse basketball, just scroll up in your podcast feed, find our UNC preview that should be out, unless you're listening on Sunday night. It will be dropping Monday morning, so we'll have that for you guys. A full UNC preview, getting ready for this big Monday game. We'll make our predictions, do our prop shop, all that stuff. So stay with us. Maybe just scroll up in your podcast feed, and we'll talk to you guys previewing UNC in a little bit.